Hi, I'm Johnny, and I'm queer. That feels very privileged to say in a way. I'm super white, incredibly straight passing, and physically able-bodied. Well, right now, mostly anyway. Thanks to an electric scooter for giving me the gifts of a broken arm and a surgically repaired broken ankle. It's really appreciated, but I identify as a queer person. I use the ID as queer, but with the note that if anyone had any outstanding issues about using the word queer as an identifier, considering its past use as a pejorative or a slur, they could use bisexual. Recently, after dealing with ongoing doubts that have existed since long before I came out, and even continued after I did so, I decided to drop the bisexual label and stop looking into the possibility of adapting the pansexual label for myself. In the end, considering how fluid it felt as a label and expression of sexuality, I decided that queer wasn't just my primary label, as it would now be my only one. And if anyone still has issues with the word, I ask that I be ID'd as an LGBTQIA person. That might need a bit of working on, though, admittedly. The point to all this is, well, I am queer. I am a queer man in the games industry. And there are a lot of us. Queer representation in the games industry, both in the games themselves, as well as the people who help make them, is starting to catch up. Albeit slowly. But it has seen a catch up also in a massive way this year alone, thanks to one of the biggest games of the year so far and some significant representation within it. But even then, there is still so much work to be done in advance in the LGBTQIA community in games and the issues around them. So, what are the fixes? And how can they be achieved? For Play Diaries, this is Press Play. I'm Johnny Cullen. Let's start. Firstly, hello. I know it's been a few months since you got one of these Press Play episodes. You actually would have gotten a new episode back in May were it not for technical difficulties, slash me being a bona fide idiot. I have a hope you'll still see that episode in some form or another down the line, but for now, Press Play is returning with something that really means a lot to me, actually. But first, let me paint the picture. Back in mid-October of 2019 at EGX, hey, remember when physical shows were still a thing? And that it was still less than a year ago. I was running around like a headless chicken, doing appointments and having meetings with publishers and developers to show off something called Maple. Maple was the code name for the thing that you're likely now hearing this from, Play Diaries. But back on the first day of the show, I was to also present a panel on being queer in the games industry. Alongside me as the MC were five people in various disciplines from games development to social media to PR and comms, who all identify as queer. You're about to hear from the following five people. Izzy Yeagan, Junior Global PR Manager for Life is Strange at Square Enix, though at the time of the panel, she was a publicist for agency MNC Saatchi. Hannah Flynn, Head of Communications at Fail Better Games. You'll know Fail Better from its work on Sunless Seas, Fallen London, and more. Charlie Hodgson, Head of Social Media for Xbox UK and Ireland, and one of the on-air personalities for Xbox UK's YouTube and streaming presence, Xbox On. Els White, Game Director at Spider Little Games on Retrace. And Ed Fear, Game Director at Mediatonic on Murder by Numbers. You may have also heard Ed earlier this year in an episode of My Favorite Game talking of Xenogears and how playing that helped him come to terms about being gay. This is not a traditional Press Play in that it is going to tell a story interspersed with some interviewed clips. Instead, we're playing this panel in full and uncut. No cuts or edits to introduce the story, besides a slight difference in quality for the full intro because of technical glitches in the proper version. Fun. Enjoy! Thank you.
today. I hope your ETS has been fantastic so far. So today we're going to discuss something that's, well, hopefully enlightening and insightful and entertaining. I apologize, by the way, if I'm very nervous. So we're talking about being queer in the games industry. You'll see six people here who have various positions in the games industry who can talk about their experiences about being queer within the games industry. My name is Donald Holm. I'm a freelance games writer for the likes of GameDaily.biz. I'm a news writer for GameDaily.biz. I have also written for the likes of Eurogamer, VG247, Official PlayStation Magazine, PC Gamer, and a ton of others. And I am a bisexual queer man who primarily identifies as queer, but if anyone has negative connotations about the word queer, then bisexual is fine.
I would also like to introduce our lovely panelists here, who are the most wonderful people. Yeah, give it up for them. They're the best people. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves down the line. Izzy, you go first.
Cool. Hi, I'm Izzy. I do PR for, games and stuff. and really excited to be here today. It's a thing I talk about a lot, to the chagrin of many people around me. But hopefully I can offer some insight and maybe a few laughs if I'm lucky today. Thank you all for coming so much. It's so cool.
Hannah?
Hi, I'm Hannah. I am communications director for Felbetter Games. Who's played a Felbetter game? Hands? Sunless Sea, Fallen London, Sunless Skies. We made those. My pronouns are she, her. I am bi. I have a wife. I have a baby. I am super old for the games industry. I'm left-handed, luckily. Being queer in games is something I think that impacts all of our lives every day. So it's something I really want to talk about. And this is the first time I've done a queer-themed panel. It's really cool. So hopefully we'll have lots of fun chats.
We definitely will. Okay, this works. Lovely. Yay! So I'm Charlie. Thank you. See a fan over there.
There's a fan out there.
I run the Xbox UK and Ireland social channels. I do their strategy. For example, Gears Inc. We just ran. I was behind that. Also going to be XO19 I'm involved with. I'm also one of the five members of Xbox On, which is Xbox UK's streaming and YouTube content team. I also do my own streams. I'm a bisexual woman. I have a fiance who is male. I have a child. And my perspective, I think, is quite interesting, is I know I work and thrive in an office that's very heterosexual, and I know at least in the last 3 years since I've been there, I have thoroughly changed the way that they think about queer spaces and Xbox's interaction with the queer space, and that was something I'd like to discuss later on.
Els?
Yep. I'm Els. My pronouns are he, him. I am a freelance narrative designer and an indie game dev. I'm from Australia. Yes, the weather is worse here. I've been in the industry for about 3 years. And yeah, you might have noticed the chair. I have a heart condition. And so that's it's an interesting sort of intersection between like the challenges I face with that and the challenges I face being a trans man and... I don't know what my sexuality is. I'm married to a woman. Draw your own conclusions. But, yeah.
Ed.
Hello. My name is Ed. I am a game director at Mediatonic on a game that we announced just last week called Murder by Numbers. I'm going to be plugging it a lot, so I do apologize for that. But
it's okay, me too.
I need to sell to continue working then. So I'm going to be shameless. I am a cis gay man. My pronouns are he, him. And I work also within Mediatonic. We're a studio of 200 people, and we have I help out with the kind of LGBT group that we have there, which is really disproportionately big, which is great. So that's kind of my perspective on things, working in a large company and trying to push those things forward as well.
I forgot to ask for everyone's pronouns at the start, so I apologize. So I guess then, first off, let's start with something easy and jovial, like,
what was your first experience of witnessing LGBT content in a game? Izzy, I'll start with you.
So my first experience with kind of queer content in games was The Sims.
That was my answer.
I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. So I've told this story before on a panel, so sorry if you've heard it before. But basically, I was very young and very naive to the world, and I found out on The Sims when I was about 6 that you could make 2 women get married, and that was an entire moment for me. So I did that and felt so bad about it afterwards that I took the disc out and broke it on purpose. So that was my first experience with queerness in games. Bit of a dramatic one, but it led to many great things.
I'm like heartbroken from your 6-year-old baby self. Oh my God.
Mine came much later. We make a game called Fall in London, which has been going for almost 10 years. And it was, as far as we know, the first commercial RPG to have a third gender option. So it's lady, gentleman, and basically there are creatures in this world with the faces of squid. Why are you concerned with my gender? Which is the third sort of option, which is the no thanks or doesn't apply or whatever option. And that's the first time that I'd seen anything like that in a commercial game. And now I work for them. I liked it, I bought it.
So unfortunately mine isn't spoilt. Mine is also The Sims. But whilst I didn't break anything, again, I think I've said this myself on a panel as well somewhere, but for me it was the fact that it didn't stop you. I could get men could love each other and females could love each other, and I thought nothing of it when I was younger. I just thought it was like an extra step in the way they like you love your friends. And then it turns out as I got over, I was like, oh, the reason why I was so compelled to make as many women love each other as possible actually meant that there was something I was very open and into when I was younger. And it sort of clicked together when I was old. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. But then looking back, I think that might have been my awakening.
Aside from The Sims, I think that's everyone's answer. Probably the first time I actually saw a gay relationship in a game might have been the first Dragon Age, which I would have played when I was 16. And that was really the first time I actually had the option to romance someone of the same gender. And I was like, wow, this game is just like letting me do that openly, and it's not because I was quite sheltered and I didn't have a very accepting sort of society around me. I was like, wow. That's actually a thing that you can put in a game and not get censored or anything. That's weird and cool. So, yeah, I think that was my first experience. That was the first time I thought I could make games about people like me.
Aside from The Sims.
Clearly The Sims is a very popular answer.
I think the one that stands out the most to me was Metal Gear Solid 2, weirdly.
Yes.
Which is not, I mean, it's not particularly great representation, but I remember, obviously there's a character Vamp who's bisexual, and I remember there's a really throwaway codec discussion between Snake, or Snake who's not really Snake at that point, but it's obviously, very obviously Snake, and Raiden, who is just terrible. and there's a moment where, like, Raiden says that something's weird about that, and Snake's like, would it be any weirder if it was dating a woman? And Raiden's like, And I remember playing that, like being 16 and being like, yeah, Snake's batting for us. Yeah, like, he might not be gay, but he's on our side. And it was like a really big, it was like a really weird moment for me. Yeah.
Yeah, the Metal Gear moment with Vamp was actually my first sort of experience of queer content in games. I didn't even realize the concept of bisexuality at the time. So seeing that in hindsight was pretty damn awesome. So that was dope. What has been your favorite representation of LGBT characters in games? Like, Else, I'll start with you.
That's a tough one. I just played AI The Somnium Files, and that has a really sweet sort of realistically heartbreaking and tragic gay relationship that's part of the story, and it's both like a really sweet and heartwarming relationship, but it's also not like they're allowed to be humanly bad for each other, and I thought that was quite nice. Otherwise, some people don't like Krem from Dragon Age. I like Krem. I think he's pretty cool. That's what I think.
Ed?
None. Can I say none?
Yeah, I don't.
It's a very reasonable answer.
I certainly don't feel I've ever related to one.
Okay.
I would say there are some good ones. I mean, Dorian in Dragon Age Inquisition is gorgeous. And you get to see his bum, so that's probably my favourite.
I relate to that.
Yeah, right?
10 out of 10.
I think that's probably, for very shallow reasons, my favourite episode. Sorry, I should be more professional than this. I will say...
We're all among the loo people here.
Yeah. So I will say I quite liked the very slight representation in Nier Automata of the operator, I think it's 21-0,
yes.
who just like happens to mention that she wants to do something for her girlfriend.
I love that.
I'm a huge fan of Yoko Taro. I have been for years, and I actually chatted with him on Twitter about this. He's actually had queer characters in all of his games, every one of his games up until now, but that's the first one where it's ever actually been in the game. Like, all of the others have been slightly Dumbledored. Like, he mentions afterwards, oh, but by the way, this person is gay. But that was the first one where he actually managed to get it in the game. And I remember him saying to me that he just found it really weird that other people especially Japanese creators, didn't put gay characters in their games, because he was like, I have loads of gay friends, so they're around me, so why would I not represent my world in what I'm building? And to me, that was kind of the pure summary of what we're all trying to do in a lot of ways, in kind of represent our worlds, kind of in other worlds.
What about the worst representation in games? Like, there's probably a good list of games to go through. Like, does anyone have a pick on who would probably win that one?
I can't think of any standouts of, like, I mean, that just might be me. I might be quite sheltered in that respect. I can't think of anything hugely that hit me in the face and made me want to go charge away and shout stuff. I think I certainly agree with Ed that there are right and wrong ways of doing it. There have been shallow attempts to sort of relate to certain individuals and certain minorities. I don't know if anyone else has any more specific examples, but I know that sometimes it can fall a bit flat. They could just be, like, tacked on, like, there you go, there's your minority for the game, but, eh.
I think, can I say, like, most of them?
Sure.
Not trying to be picky here about the representation that we do have, however, it could be better. I think a lot of it is about just not having somebody in the room who can be like, actually, maybe don't do this because it's terrible optics and it will be terrible for everyone involved. But also not putting the pressure on that one person in the room to actually speak out and say something, because I don't know if you've ever been like the only person of colour or like the only woman or the only queer person in a room. It's a lot of pressure to put on someone to actually speak out for an entire community. It's not something that you should expect people to have to do. And I think unless something is woven into the very fabric of how a company is run in terms of the kind of people that they bring into the fold, I don't think that there will be better representation.
So, have games helped any of you in a way in terms of helping you realise that you've been queer? Anyone want to answer that?
The Sims.
Okay, I guess that sort of leads back.
But I don't think it helped me realise it. I think it sort of gave this like a blank canvas for me to experiment. It didn't say, no, they cannot go together, no, those women cannot be married. In the same way, another example being like Saints Row, for example, you can put Nolan North's voice inside a female presenting body. I don't think those helped me realize that I was queer. I think I did that in my own personal private time. But I think having games that were limitless in the opportunity to explore those things and it not be like so much the point of the game, but it being just naturally in the game, and there you go, this is also a thing. I think that it's quite nice when you go and you revisit those games, you go, oh, that was there the whole time. It's just a totally normal, just a cool thing. I genuinely, if there's anyone in the crowd who has ever played a game and it sort of hit them like a light bulb, that's what light bulbs do. If you did play a game that did suddenly make you realize, that'd be amazing. I know personally for me speaking, I haven't been affected by a game. I've just felt similar to one. There's a lot of hand movements.
I think it's more validating than it is revelationary. It's just kind of saying that how you see the world and your place in the world is reflected in the creative content that you see around you, and like that really helps to validate your existence, which really isn't something that should have to happen, but you know, c'est la vie.
C'est la vie. Sorry, couldn't help but throw in a bit of B-word.
Moving on.
What do you like? So let's look specifically about LGBT representation within the games industry. Like, how has LGBT representation been within the industry within your own workspaces, and how you've tried to include it in your own work? I've wrote to you first, Ed.
We announced this game last week, Murder My Numbers. It's the first game where I've been able to write a gay character. I'm a director now, but I was a writer. I've written for a bunch of different publishers, and in some cases, I didn't feel comfortable pitching a gay character to the publisher. In some instances, it was explicitly turned down, not to me, but to colleagues. And so I think what a lot of people don't realize is that there's still just getting any kind of representation is still such a battle within development and publishing. I mean, it's definitely better in the indie space, but when you're dealing with publishers, one of the things that I realized recently is like the big new market for publishers is China. And so when you explicitly put some LGBT content in your game, you are alienating, you are cutting off like quite a big market for that game, or you have to do a censored version or whatever. And so it really is, for any developer that will happily put this content out in games, it is actually, like, they do deserve a lot of applause because you really do have to take a stand. And it may not seem like it. Sometimes I certainly, as a consumer, sit there and be like, well, that person just happened to mention that they have a husband. That's pretty rubbish representation. But I also know that I also met somebody at Bungie who told me what a ridiculous amount of effort it took to get just a character offhandedly mentioning that they have a male character mentioning that he has a husband. So it's really, we definitely need to fight more for it. But it's also, I think there's a lot of people don't understand just how much effort it takes just to do even the most tiny of things.
Because there's a lot of politics as well, especially considering how the AAA publishers are sort of looking after their own ground financial stakes in it as well. And obviously, you don't want to alienate, you know, cultural appropriations and stuff like that there, such as China and even Japan as well. Because like you mentioned Nier, and that was an example of... So Nier Automata, Ed mentioned the operator stuff, and that was actually one of the first true queer moments for me that made me feel really comfortable. And it came a few months after I publicly came out. And what I found very fascinating about it was that it came from a game with a high known stature and from a AAA space in Square Enix. There's a lot of politics to that as well.
Yeah, I think what I will say is, like anybody who works in game development knows that the most annoying comment you can ever get is something is lazy, right? Like when people comment, "Oh, lazy devs," it's like literally the most annoying thing. The laziest comment that anyone can ever make is that this is just woke culture that people are trying to earn points. Like, it is so much more effort to do this than to not do this. So to just be like, "Oh, you know, they're just playing into PC culture," is like, you don't actually realize quite how much effort has to go on in order to make that happen. So the idea that you can dismiss it as a company just being woke for publicity, it's like, yeah, maybe it's on, maybe like, I don't know, Nike's social media account, maybe that might be like that, but this machine with thousands of people that and regulatory bodies and all of this kind of stuff, like, no, it's not. It's really not.
I want to get a take on that same question from a PR perspective as well. So, Izzy, Hannah?
I think it's a lot about, from a PR perspective, it's a lot about making sure that you kind of incorporate inclusive language and make sure that communications are kind of inclusive in that way, and making sure that you don't say the wrong thing, or making sure that you have someone who can say, maybe we should word it this way, or maybe you should word it that way. Obviously, I don't think it, because I'm not a developer, and we don't control the creative content that we actually publicize. It's, you know, a lot of working with what we're given, which can be amazing, in the majority of the time it is, because like it's such a rich creative field. However, it is definitely about relaying those stories to consumers and to press in ways that make them feel like they're for them, and make those stories really emphasize how universal they are.
I think I can kind of say something here in the sense that, so I'm inside a kind of a big beast at Xbox, and I feel like hopefully someone would have noticed over the past 3 years, it's the tiny things that are telling other people that it's just don't do it. I flat out refuse to put any rainbow controllers, and I don't change our logo to a rainbow when it comes to Pride Month, because I do not see the company doing that any other month. And also, I hate the idea of changing a logo for a month and then it being the month after being like, no, not anymore, and like turning it back. I hate that. And like, I'm probably gonna get sold off of this somewhere. Xbox released their rainbow pin this year for Pride. All of it profit. None of it went to any organization, so I didn't buy one. I just went, nope, not for me. And the past 3 years I've been at Xbox, I've had three different scenarios. The very first year I sort of put on a party really quickly, and it was at the loading bar, and we had the London Gamers down, who are a fantastic group. We played Overwatch, and I just gave away a bunch of games. And then the next week, all the people at work were like, we can't do that. What if loads of people watch something happen? What if they're protesting? And I'm like, lads, calm down. It was fine. The year after, nothing happened, because I wanted to do a test and see if anyone else mentioned anything. No one said anything for Pride Month, so nothing was done. And this year, I went guns blazing with a huge idea, and we got Stonewall involved, and it got cut down because people, heterosexual people, were scared. Like, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't put this amount of money towards doing that, we don't have the time, the space, I'm not sure what the story will be, what's the marketing, and it's just like, sometimes you just don't need to think about that. Sometimes it's people who don't get applauded need to be applauded, and if you're only comfortable doing that 1 month a year, then that's fine, I get it, like, that's a place you're comfortable playing in. But my current battle is trying to make Xbox One did a Pride video. I want to repost that on social media in November when it's not Pride Month. And honestly, it's a headache asking for permission. But I'll get it done. And that's what it's like on the inside of somewhere. That it's a very, very big beast, like I said before. And there's a lot of people who are dubious about how far they want to get involved without being called out for just, as you say, being woke. When that's not the case, you want to show that there's a deeper connection to it, right? But when you have millions of people on the internet, you post a tweet and everyone's just like, woke, feminist, all of this. It's just like, oh my God, honestly, please.
So what would be the most ideal way of representation in the industry, Hannah?
What would be the most
ideal way of representation?
I was thinking about this. I think about
That's
this
lucky.
A lot. We've got to queer the work. Gay first. Make it more gay.
That's a given.
Right, so change won't come without funding and a deadline. So what we need to do is, those of us who have influence, who are in stable businesses like mine, who are in positions of influence, of faces of things, have to use what we have to make things gayer from the beginning, to make things gay in development, to make things gay in their inception and creation. And This is something we do at Fail Better. A bunch of us are queer in different ways, but we do things like consultations with interest groups. So for Sunless Skies, we have a lot of characters in Sunless Skies, more so than most people even notice, which is great, because it matters to the people it matters to, that we have who are trans and non-binary. And we had a consultation group called Queerly Represent Me, work with our writers, that didn't have experience in that direct lived experience, but they wanted to reflect it and include it well. So we found an interest group who do consultancy work, we paid them, and we put their ideas in the game. And in fact, when we were doing the consultation, it was going so well, and we were vibing so much, we hired one of the people from the consultancy group to write a character in the game, the feline eccentric. So we grew our freelancing resource, we put more and more voices for writing into our games, and the game is gay from the beginning. You can't make something, Dumbledore it, or stick one mention of a husband to it for a male-presented character and call it queer enough. It's not enough. So that's what I'm going to do. You'll do it too.
Yeah, give that a round of applause. That's worth fun. Yeah.
Going to go out there and just individually point at everyone and give them a pep talk on here's what you need to do specifically when you go into work tomorrow, okay?
I mean, I would just like to say that I think the way Fail Better does it is like a model for how other companies should do it. It's how, if I'm lucky enough to make another game, it's absolutely something I want to emulate, and I will be getting, like, talking to you about that at some point. But yeah, absolutely, queer things from the beginning. It really is important.
Else, what about you? I want to hear how you would think would be the best representation.
I mean, I think Hannah really said it. That's pretty much my sort of motto, at least for the stuff I make personally, not necessarily for contract work. But yeah, just like, why not just make every character gay? Like, why not? Thank you. I don't have a producer. I can do whatever I like. And so, for people who are not me, it would be nice if you would support those of us who are doing... I mean, we're very lucky. I'm very lucky. There is quite a thriving indie community of people who are making queer, gay, trans, all sorts of great games. It would be cool if you could support us. That would be nice. I think I got off track there.
I think there's something
there.
In just having a voice in it. It might not work every single time, but if you're that one voice in a room saying, how about this? It might not happen this time, but at least you're saying something, you're feeling proactive, and one day it might stick, a different project that might vibe this way. Maybe people will just get bored of you saying it, they'll do it one day and realise, oh crap, we should have been doing this all along. But it's just, the best thing to do is just to keep trying. Don't get beaten down even though you feel like you are most days.
I think really when it comes down to it, the goal is that panels like this don't have to exist. That the
I would love to not be here talking about this.
Would just love to just go. I'm kidding. So I think by that I mean queerness and diversity and inclusion of the myriad of ways that human beings can exist should already be woven into the very fabric of this amazingly creative medium that is so freeing and freeing for people who get to experience it. And I think that the real goal fundamentally is for this to be woven into the very fabric of everything that people do development-wise, all the way from development to marketing to PR to sales. It can't start from anywhere in the middle. It has to start from the bottom to the top and all the way through.
I think it's also one of the things that I'm always saying is it's not just hiring more queer people, though that's absolutely something you need to do. It's making sure they have a voice within the company as well, because otherwise it is just a token gesture. If they don't have the opportunity to feed back into what you're doing, then you know you're not gonna get the benefit of your diverse workforce. We had a funny moment when I was developing Murder by Numbers about about 2 months, about 3 or 4 months ago, I suddenly realized quite how camp the game had become. And I was talking to my boss, and I was like, because I've been given a huge amount of creative freedom on it, which is wonderful. And I was talking to my boss about it, and I was like, yeah, I've realized how camp it is. I think I'm going to really lean into it. I think I'm going to make it camp. And he just looked at me, and he was like, what do you think you've been doing for the last 18 months? And I realized that I'd never set out to do it, but because I was able to make creative decisions and create what I wanted to create, it naturally turned out to be really quite gay. And that, to me, was a massive moment. It was like, oh, okay, so we need to get more of the... We need to get more people being able to do this. Like, more people in the position where they get to do... Where they get to put out the content they want to put out, and that will naturally create better representation, because those people won't just be in the room, they'll be running the room. That's what we need.
Woo! Promote gays!
Woo!
Yeah. Pay rise.
This is something that is aimed at Charlie and Hannah specifically, and it's something that you mentioned to me a few days ago, actually, Hannah. How the industry really doesn't consider stuff like motherhood and perhaps older queer people in the industry, like you're both mothers. Hannah, you're probably the oldest person on the panel. Is the oldest person on the panel. I just wanted to be polite. How do you think the industry should handle those sorts of things? Not just in terms of how the games are made, but within the games themselves.
I am super old. I'm 35, which is like 10
right,
years
old. Right, it's not that old. Rein that in. Right now.
All of my colleagues are younger than me, except the ones who are more senior than me. Weird. So when I joined Failbetter, there was nothing in the contract at all about parenthood in any form. There was no mention of maternity leave, how it would work. And actually, a certain person who I won't name asked me in my interview if I were planning any sabbaticals soon, having known that I'd just got married. So that's illegal. That was bad. It's much better now. But the thing that made us change it was me in the boardroom, many months pregnant, going, excuse me, these aren't good enough terms. So, as I say, things don't change without money or a deadline. We were a stable business. We were able to make these provisions, and they are industry-leading provisions for maternity, paternity, and adoption leave. And there was a deadline because I was going to give birth. So the fact that I was there to bring it up is the only reason it changed. And I had to have a lot of time off for fertility treatment. I had to have a lot of time off when I was pregnant for various health reasons. And the way that we work is without crunch and with a reasonable expectation upon all of our staff. So all of these baseline ethical things have really impacted me positively as a gay mum, like as both of those things. But it, as I say, it came from me being there. So the real answer is, put the gays in charge.
Again, put the gays in charge. I can't speak too much about motherhood in games, again, because I'm not close on the development side of things. I know, just speaking on that topic very briefly, that any instance I can think of motherhood or having a child in the game is normally trauma, which is... I mean, I know yes. It exists, I know it's out there, but it's often... I mean, it's the Roald Dahl thing, right? Roald Dahl either hated kids or parents and just killed one of them. That was just what the dude wanted to do. But me personally in the office, I felt some prejudice in the sense of being a mother, in that I come into the office slightly later than all the rest of my colleagues because I have to do the school drop-off and traveling to work. And it's a consistent conversation in my reviews that it's felt like I'm not present or I leave the office too early at the exact time I'm allowed to leave, because otherwise I don't see my daughter before she goes to bed. And sometimes it does feel like I'm being left out of circles because I have to work from home because she's ill, or if I take her to a dentist, conversations will happen and I'll miss meetings. So being a mother in an office, it could be a completely different panel, if I'm honest. Bringing it back around to this, though, I'd love to see a queer mother or a queer parent in a game and a healthy relationship around that as well.
Yeah, let's have the parents be together and not die.
Precisely.
That would be great.
Revolutionary.
And
concept.
Let's have the pregnancy not be the plot point in the game where everyone's going to die and she's clearly going to die because she's pregnant. Like Walking Dead, you know, the whole, oh my God. Nothing but pregnancy stress, always. But that's across all type of media and it's not specific to being gay. It just takes us longer to get there and it costs us a lot of money.
So, this may have been sort of answered already, but how can studios help further LGBT representation in games internally, like Ed?
Sorry, was it how can studios help?
Help with representation internally.
One of the things that I definitely think is fostering a space within your company for those minorities, and then empowering them to discuss things. You know, we have our LGBT group at Mediatonic, and we don't just use it as a gossip room, although we do, obviously. we also we use it when we're talking about, like, okay, I want to try and, you know, somebody not that long ago was like, we've got a character creator in the next game. How do you think I should go about saying to everyone that maybe, like, we should have trans options, you know, or non-binary options? And I've also, for some of the characters, so in Murder by Numbers with the gay character I'm in, I've put that dialogue in the room and been like, guys, what do you, like, how do you feel about this, like? And they were actually like, no, you've totally messed it up. That's a really bad gay character. And it was really useful for me because I was able to take that feedback and do it. So I think if your employees have a space where they can discuss these things, then it will help foster. Because the thing you've got to remember is, it's very easy for us to say, oh, you know, you get in the room, or, you know, you need to speak out. It's really difficult to speak out, especially if you're, you know, if you're, you know, whatever minority you are or whatever, to speak when you're in a room full of, you know, that's 90% straight, you know, 95% white, you know, to be able to bring up these things takes a lot of courage to do it. So it's really important to give your employees a way of, like, spurring each other on to do that, I think. And I think that will really help kind of increase the quality of the representation.
I think one of the things for me is, you can go next, my darling. I'm sorry, I jumped in there. One of the things for me is, I mentioned it before, how every year when it comes down to Pride stuff, I feel like I'm the person who initiates the conversation. And one of the things I would quite like to work on, because I think it's something that, as you say, it's developing a space, it would be nice if I met collaboratively and creatively with all of my other peers in the office, and we all discuss Pride Month together, for example. It's a very easy place to begin, because I feel like, as I mentioned before, I am a bisexual woman, but I've been in a long-term relationship. I am actually engaged to a male, that I feel like that's forgotten about, and it's just sort of brushed off, like, bi erasure is real and all that. And then when it comes round to Pride and the seasons I want to talk about and the topics that are interesting to me, I actually feel myself become the other. And everyone's sort of like, oh, yeah, she is queer. Oh, I forgot about that. And then that sort of conversation is handed off to me, like, I'm the representative of the office for this sort of conversation. And I think there just needs to be a conversation, either younger, maybe at school, or maybe just a conversation with HR in offices, which is, if someone is proud enough or confident and brave enough to come forward about these things and speak passionately, not to treat them as it's like a thing or a revelation, but to go, cool, what do you want to do about it then? And it just be a natural thing that happens. Like, if someone came into the office and wanted to start talking about how straight they were, no one's going to go, oh, scandaloso. No, it's not going to happen. So why does it happen the other way around? It's 2019. I got you there, didn't I?
You did.
You sang Bewitched, in fairness.
Yeah, we heard that.
Yeah, we all heard that.
C'est la vie.
I wanted to add something really simple that offices can do, which is to have a pronoun conversation. We all, I think, put pronouns in our bio, that kind of stuff, on Twitter. And I think that something to foreground and make things safer for more diverse people that is super easy is to put pronouns on your Slack name or put pronouns on your staff card. We had a press event and I made little name badges for everybody and they had pronouns on. And then to have a conversation about what that is, what it means, why it's important, why everybody should normalize that kind of conversation, and then to just pick up with people if they treat it insensitively. I had a few people come to my press event who used the pronoun box to write something silly. And they weren't like my colleagues, so I didn't on the day feel like I could challenge them. But it was disrespectful in a way that I was like, well, you're not coming to the next one. So the more we talk about this kind of stuff, I think the more open and easy it becomes for people for whom speaking up might be a bit more awkward.
Also, I feel like that kind of conversation just kind of normalizes not assuming things about people who you work with. And I think because the whole concept of workplace culture is such a tenuous concept and everything is so different and it's such like an enclosed environment a lot of the times, it can be a bit hard to like correct someone or to kind of make yourself stand out in any way that you don't want to stand out in, because you don't a lot of the time have an opportunity to sit that person down and explain your traumatic past and like why you need to be referred to in a certain way, and that, you know, it's not something that we have the time or energy to actually do. So I think just having those conversations about not assuming something about the people you work with actually just normalizes, you know, just being kinder and just being more considerate, which we can all strive for.
So this is for an everybody question, but I'm going to specifically for you first, Izzy. Specifically, as a person of colour, and you probably answered this already, do you feel represented in games?
No. I do not feel represented in games, not just in games, in a lot of spaces. Sure. I mean, I think you notice it most when you don't have it. You don't really notice it if you're represented your entire life. It's not something that is glaringly obvious to you. But I think when you go without it, you suddenly realise how actually fundamental it is to the formative years of your life, being able to see people who look like you and who think and feel like you on screen or on games, on TV, in music. It's something that, like, as a brown gay woman, I've never really felt like I've seen myself. And I don't know, I think it just causes this kind of disconnect between myself and the creativity of others. I feel like there's still so much work to be done and I don't want to have to do it all. Like, I get tired really easily. So I don't think that it needs to be a thing where, like, if you're brown, you have to make everything better for brown people, because that's just not realistic. And honestly, I don't want to be the forebearer of that. So I think everybody, no matter who you are, you have to work towards that.
I'll go. If you're going to clap, go for it. Come on. In a sense, yes, but also no, but only because the majority of my outward-facing persona is very stereotypical. I'm quite femme. I am in a male relationship. I know I've mentioned that 10,000 times. I'm sorry, it's really weird.
Straight past.
Yeah. I wanted to avoid the word in case some people feel a certain way about it, but essentially, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. So I think in that sense, I guess I am represented. That's the word. But on the flip side is you don't see a lot of games or media with the intricacies that make someone like me a bit more unique, and that there are other elements to me that isn't traditional, and how it feels like in some spaces you are white or a person of color, you are straight or gay, and there's no like mix and match. You wouldn't see a person who is a person of color who's exploring their non-binaryism. It's they just know what they are immediately, and I feel like sometimes when it comes to being queer, until you get the voices, as Ed mentioned earlier, that sort of open up the education around these sort of things, queer can also itself be treated very binary in that respect. You either are or aren't, and you're this or that.
I feel like sometimes if you're more than one thing, sometimes people think you're creating problems or you're being overdramatic about it, and like, why have you got so many labels on you? And it's like, it's not because I want them, it's because other people use those words to define who I am as a human being, and like, that's the only way that I can actually relate to the world, because that's the lens that everyone else sees me through. But I think being more than one thing, you often need to kind of split yourself in half in order to feel halfway represented some of the time. And that's just not a good feeling. No one should need to split themselves in half. It's really painful.
How can the industry improve queer representation for minorities?
That's a big question.
It's a bit loaded too.
Solve it now.
Yeah. I think I say it a lot, but just having people in the room, and that's not enough. Having people in the room who are empowered to speak out and who have powers behind them and who have power behind them and the ability to speak out and that they're feeling heard and actually seen. I think that's actually a really difficult thing to do, so it needs to be kind of woven into the very fabric of everything that we do. There's no simple way to do it, and it's a really, really long process. I mean, just see how long it took to get women in the industry, just
bloody
like
women.
Yeah.
We do work experience and internships and incubations. And Els is one of our interns as well. It's pretty cool. So something that is a partway fix for this is that our work experience young people are 14, 15. They represent the borough that we're in. They're from Southwark. So they've been majority people of colour. Our internships are paid. They have been actually across all, it's easier to say, across our work experience, incubations and internships, they've been 80% not cis, white, straight men. So because, again, I keep coming back to it, you've got to fund it, you've got to give time to it, and you have to give a deadline to it. We pay our interns to ensure that people can come from further away, they get the London Living Wage, and that ensures economic diversity, geographic diversity, and because of the types of game we make, the people come to us. They want to work for us. They see racial and queer diversity in our games, and that feeds the cycle. It's this is what you're saying about it being everywhere. It's part of everything that we do. And whatever you put out does eventually come back to you. And that is like reassuring, I think, for any queer creator that what you're putting out is making a difference. And I see it with every application I get from excited queer kids who saw, you know, one of the characters in Summer Skies has in the game has crossed out the gender marker on a form. And they see that and they think, oh Christ, they get it. And then they come to us, and it's brilliant.
Else, can I get your experience on how that was for you in terms of the better?
It was really great. They were really great every step of the process. I thought it was a very cool experience. Everyone was like, what? Something sort of looping back to something we were talking about earlier, sort of practical ways to make queer people feel more sort of represented. Sort of thinking ahead of time about things like pronouns in your forms, about legal names and preferred names, stuff like that, which I thought was all very good. Yeah, no, Failbetter is a very gay company. There's just a lot
great advert for us, this panel. I couldn't have paid for better advertising for this panel.
No, and
thank
just
you.
Yeah, I felt really it's a good place to work. I'm sort of, as someone who hasn't worked in a lot of studios, I'm a little bit leery of going to work in a big studio because I think it's probably going to be quite a stressful experience. But no, Failbetter was, and being proactive about saying that kind of thing, being like, you know, I mentioned it, I think, on my CV, and they came back and they were like, you know, we just want to, this is the name we're going to use, and tell everyone to refer to you by, is that what you want? Are these the pronouns that you want? Is that okay? That was all, that made me feel really comfortable and really happy, you know, going in every day. And yeah, the payment also helps.
As well as that, like we mentioned it in part a while ago about Nier Automata and the sort of cultural implications of that coming from a AAA studio and how massive that felt, even just for a small moment. Just how queer content can sort of have a different cultural representation, like Nier Automata. But on the flip side of that, you've also got stuff like what happened with Catherine Full Body and the Japanese release of that. And so there is a double-edged sword in that, and I sort of want to get your take on it, Ed, because I'd say probably of all of us, you're probably more better parsed in that way in terms of Japanese games. So how can the industry sort of take a lead from what happened with Catherine and avoid situations like that?
I come to really sorry, I couldn't hear most of that because of the air raid siren. sorry, could you?
Yeah, just basically, how can the industry as a whole avoid a situation like what happened with the Japanese release of Catherine Full Body?
With the Japanese what, sorry?
Catherine.
Catherine. Oh, yeah. Woo! Okay. It's not really my place to talk about that one in particular, but... I wish I had an answer. I've worked with a lot of Japanese teams in my life, and we've had discussions, and they've just not really... With no ill intent, they just don't understand why it would be good to have a gay character or a trans character or something like that. And I honestly don't know the answer to it. What I found was when I was working with them, I became very closeted myself. And what I've decided since is that my way of doing that is just to not do that anymore. I felt like I had to, because I didn't want to rock the boat, I kind of kept myself down a little bit, and you know, they'd be like, oh, you know, have you got a girlfriend? And I'd be like, no. What I've decided now is just to not do that. And I have quite a few Japanese people that follow me on Twitter, and I've just decided, and there was a point where I was a bit like, oh, are they gonna see what I'm saying about this kind of stuff? And I've just decided that I need to be without sounding like the end of a terrible musical, I need to be me. I think just being honest about it and hopefully if people who don't get exposure to this sort of stuff a lot in their normal everyday lives begin to get exposure to it from me, then I guess that's all I can really think of at the moment. Like I would dearly love to. I want to work with a lot more Japanese creators, and I will make them work on stuff that's probably quite queer. So I honestly, it's a difficult one. It's for a lot of Japanese companies. It's just actually paying attention to their Western subsidiary offices, because I know a lot of these companies. You know, every Japanese publisher, their European and American arm is telling them this stuff. It's whether it's listened to. That's the major concern, and I don't know what we can do to ever change
apart
that.
Apart from to
just keep saying it.
Going.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there are some. Aside from Yokotaro, obviously there is. Well, I guess he kind of counts as a smaller dev. There are some smaller devs doing some good stuff in Japan, which is good. Swery's doing good stuff. Uchikoshi's doing good stuff. But yeah, it's just, you just keep, and those guys just keep saying it, and they keep saying it, and yeah, hopefully little by little people will get exposed to it and it'll become normalized.
I mean, that's how it becomes the norm, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You just keep talking about it. You don't conceal yourself. You don't brush certain identities and experiences under the rug because it makes other people uncomfortable. It makes people uncomfortable because they are yet to be aware of this or exposed to it. And I think there might be a little bit of friction to begin with, particularly with cultures that are quite opposed to it, let's say. But just keep going.
Yeah.
Gay every day.
Let's be gay. There's a very weird thing in the industry in that there's a lot of indies doing great things, like what you're doing with Retrace Elves, and there's plenty of indie developers and creators who are out there who are queer, but oddly enough, and this is something me and you have talked about as well, Hannah, that there's no big queer creator in the industry, like a queer creator on the level of, say, Hideo Kojima, Neil Druckmann, Ken Levine, Krzysztof, whatever. What is it going to take for the industry to see a creator like that?
I'm working on it.
Yeah, come on, Els.
I'm trying.
Everybody buy retries at Halloween.
It's just going to take... I mean, what really big female developers are there out there, you know?
Literally a handful.
And like you said, like it took this long to get this many women in the industry, you know? We're another step behind that. Yeah, it's... I think it's just going to take time and people pushing and people supporting.
You know, there is something that happens more so in film than it does in games. In games, people do go to and from AAA to indie. They get bored of one, they burn out on one, they try the other. But there's something specific that happens in film where an art house or an independent film creator gets kind of bought up wholesale by a big studio to do a Marvel movie or whatever. Guy Ritchie goes on to do Sherlock Holmes. Taika Waititi goes on from his independent New Zealand productions to do a really wonderfully queer, bonkers Thor. What is the availability of somebody who's come up through the indie space and then who gets put in charge of the next Assassin's Creed? What does that look like? People need to take more risks. And unfortunately, because of the cultural sensitivities of selling abroad and losing 30% of your market, making the game super, super gay at that scale is something that most big places are really afraid of.
I'd hate to do my job at this point. I really am going to apologise to everyone for doing my job. I can't mention any specifically because, frankly, there's quite a lot. But ID Games coming into the ID at Xbox program, games going onto Game Pass. If you know any queer games or developers that are in those spaces, play them, talk about them on Reddit, talk about them on Twitter. Let the larger voices hear that those games are in the majority now and amongst all the rest, and they're played and they're adored, and then that will only go up from there. Those two specific, again, my job Xbox things are really, really good. They're fantastic for that.
Also, from a PR perspective, I'm going to say that a lot, sorry. I don't think people realise how important PR is in terms of actually getting people to notice that a thing exists and noticing a person exists in terms of like developers and individual people. And you know what? PR costs a lot. It's very expensive. So I just don't... It's not extremely accessible to every single developer who's got an amazing game but, you know, doesn't have the resources to inform people about it. And doesn't have the resources to make people write about it or to do press events or press junkets. And it's not something that you can just do on your own. That's why there's agencies, literally, Asachi is an agency run around literally doing that for people. So I think also maybe making promotion and PR and marketing a little bit more accessible for people. You know, it doesn't all have to be million-pound campaigns, floating something down the Thames, you know? It can be just like, you know, a Twitter campaign. And that's just as impactful sometimes.
We are starting to run out of time, but I'm just going to wrap through two more questions and then maybe we can take one or two from the audience. This is for everyone, but I'm going to throw it to you. Is it like... Why are so many queer people attracted to video games specifically?
Well, so here's some background. I studied English literature in university, so I have some theoretical theories about this. So my hypothesis is that because a lot of what we as queer people experience the world through is a very performative lens. We learn how to perform gender in a certain way, how to perform heterosexuality in a certain way in order to be safe or accepted or acknowledged. And I think games offer us a performative sphere in order to actually represent ourselves in the ways that we see ourselves. And not have to perform to somebody else's rules. And I think giving us that free performative tool in order to control a character and make them do what you want them to do makes us feel a little bit more in control makes us feel a little bit more like we're, like our rules and how we see ourselves are a little bit more valid.
So, I've more or less sort of asked this probably a few times, but let's say you're all given a magic wand. What is the one thing that you would do in terms of representation in the industry? Like, you had one chance to use a wand, like anything you want in terms of representation for queer people in the industry. What would it be?
I would like a brown character, maybe?
Just
is that
one.
Too much to ask?
Just one.
One? I would like one.
Okay, maybe three.
Actually, if you go over to the Marvel's Avengers stand, yeah. where I am currently working, our lead character is actually a Pakistani-American young lady. So that's fun. Yeah, Miss Marvel, yeah, Kamala Khan, which is very cool. I would like to see a brown queer woman, if that's possible. Three things, brown, queer, and a woman. I don't want to be, like, shooting for the stars here, but, like, we exist. I'm sitting right here. Basically, someone who's more than one thing, because you can be more than one thing.
Anyone else got something to add to that?
I would like to see two trans people in the same game.
Yes.
Aside from you, Hannah.
I would like to change the way people fear criticism. And I think that to hesitate on putting queer characters, queer people of colour in games, because you fear that it might not let your game sell as well, or that some asshat on Reddit is going to say something and it's going to start a thread and it's going to keep going. It's just don't. I just want that fear to go away and it to be, if someone wants to walk into a room and make a character to do this, and it'd be like, okay, we do that. We're going to put a woman on the front of an FPS box art. Cool, let's do that and not give a crap when it's released what everyone's going to say. I think there's too much concern for the people who you don't want buying your game and the people you don't really care about their opinion because their opinion is clearly ignorant. So just to sweep them under the rug.
Yeah. So, last question. Let's end this on a bit of a light note before we, if we have time for audience questions, for one or two audience questions. Favourite queer character in a game? For all of you. Charlie's annoyed. She doesn't know who to pick now.
No, it's more the issue that I've just forgotten every single one. So no, I'll go fifth on this answer, if that's okay.
Isabella from Dragon Age 2. Love
I
her.
I am going to force you for an answer, Charlie.
Help me! I'm gonna have to watch my own YouTube video in a second. I can't think of anyone.
To be fair, she did do a really great Pride video that you should
Thank
definitely
you.
Watch.
Thank you. It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else got?
I mean, the joke answer is there is a trans Pokemon trainer who you own. It's just a throwaway line, but it's kind of cool. That's the only thing I can think of right now. I have forgotten everything.
I bet we all prepared for this question as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I know what I'm going to say, without naming any specific names, every single character, and I believe there were many queer characters in Night in the Woods. That whole game, just the whole atmosphere, the personalities outside of being queer, everything about that game I thought was spectacular. There we go.
I would like to say there is a... this is really obscure. There is a character in the Final Fantasy 15 Assassin's Creed crossover event who is just randomly standing there, and he's a guy, and he goes, "Carl, Prompto's really cute." And I was just like, whoa! So I like him because I like his... I like how direct he was. And he was just like, "That guy's cute." So, yeah, him.
I would just like to say the Fortunate Navigator from Sunless Skies, because he is a gorgeous heartthrob stealth trans man. Like, he is extremely beautiful, and you read some content pretty much compulsorily that would make you realize that he is trans. But a lot of the more bro-y people who play our game kind of never notice, but they all think he's really, really cool. So I love that he goes out there and does great work for us. even though people don't realise. It's great.
What
about you? What about you?
What about you, John?
Okay.
Who's yours?
Yeah, it's Tim Lawler.
You're on the spot now, sunshine.
Put this down.
It's so easy when I'm on the podium. gosh. I think it probably goes back to the Nier Automata example, because it is such a minor example, I'll admit, compared to the likes of maybe Ellie from The Last of Us, Bant from MGS2, etc. But I go back to that Nier Automata situation with the operator basically confessing her feelings to TV about her fellow operator. And the reason for that is, as I mentioned this actually, it's the fact that I found that moment not just really significant in the fact that it was in a AAA RPG from a massive AAA publisher from a conservative country in Japan, but also because it came at a time where I had just come out publicly as bisexual, as queer. And seeing that really made my heart go up 1,000 levels. And it genuinely meant a lot to me in that seeing such a moment like that, especially so soon after coming out publicly, and basically having that situation actually taken away from me nearly, in a way, for various reasons I won't get into, because it's not the time or place, but seeing that moment really resonated with me a lot, because it was such a simple moment, but it was an important moment. So that is probably my favorite character in a queer game. If definitely the favorite queer moment in a game, sure.
Okay, you pass.
with that in mind, do we have time for one or two audience questions? Yeah, one or two audience questions. So if you have a question for us, stick your hand up and we will come around to you. So put your hand up if you have a question. Run back.
In the darkness. Hello. Yes.
We're going.
Hello. So, a fun one, hopefully. If you could turn any character queer, anyone at all, who would you want to queer up?
What was that?
I could, like...
Did you ask if we want to make someone queer, who would it be?
Basically. Like, if you could pick any character, who would you queer up?
Sonic. Next. He loves gold jewellery, he's got great shoes, super gay. Blue hair, yeah.
I think the basic answer is just make
Sonic's gay.
I think the basic answer is to just make everyone games queer. Every character. Queer. That's right. We got time for one more question? You in the back?
Hello. My question is about Marcoms and talking about, you know, diversity and how we can kind of better our communities through education and, you know, being more inclusive. And, you know, used to, Xbox, I'm so sorry, what's your name?
I can barely, I'm leaning forward to try and get close to the speakers. Okay.
This is a presenter. Sorry, Charlie. He's talking about how, you know, your one wish was like how people could be less scared about talking about this stuff. And that's my kind of question is, you know, trying to talk more about this to, you know, our communities and dealing with people who are not very nice and, you know, inviting people in. That's basically the question is like, how can communities better... try and, you know, welcome more people into our communities without possibly being, I don't know, like maybe too combative. I'm not sure.
I'm just sit down here like I'm Dr. Phil now, sorry. I can't be bothered to climb if I'm honest. I think, so particularly with my approach with Pride this year is I knew Xbox One were going to be making a video and I didn't want it to sit on YouTube where it would inevitably get
gross comments, as YouTube often garners. I wanted to truncate it into, my plan was to promote it into 10 different videos, focusing on each of the 10 games mentioned in the video. I wanted to put paid support behind it. I wanted to reach out to Twitter and make a trending moment. Sorry, I've got speech impediment. And I wanted it to just be everywhere that you go during Pride Month is that Xbox has a video out, and it's not that it made a video that went out a little bit out of Pride Month and it was a little bit tucked away and you ignore it, because I think a lot of people have a fear to put the stuff that you put out there, particularly people like all of the lovely folks on the stage today. When you put your heart and soul into something and you know you put it in front of people who are going to be an ass about it, it's difficult to absorb that. But I think it's you're putting it out there because you know there are people out there that need to watch it or that want to feel represented, and maybe they didn't realize they were represented in some cases in some games. So I genuinely think the only way you could change those opinions and to make a community often might be this magic wand we discussed earlier. But I also think you can have your own mental magic wand about it by just ignoring them. They are not worth it for your art. They're not worth it for your mental health, your emotional well-being. There are people out there who need to see what you've done, and you make it for them. And that's the whole process. And they're going to be there. There's going to be awful people along the way, but they mean zilch. Does that help? You're welcome. Does anyone else want this?
That was everything.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess the only thing, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing you said. You sort of have to become a little bit arrogant. You have to, like, I
love
have
being arrogant.
Terrible, terrible self-esteem issues, but I come out here and I pretend to be very proud and arrogant and believing in myself, because I know that there are other guys out there like me. There are other people out there who need to see this stuff that I didn't have when I was their age, and I just gotta take a deep breath and do it.
Just gotta break through the noise. There's gonna be hate. There's gonna be hate for anything I think you do nowadays, regardless if you think it's the most positive, wonderful thing in the world. There's gonna be hate, and you just gotta sort of break through that fatty layer.
And it's really hard.
Yeah, it's tough.
You gotta do it.
I think I am going to point out that at the next EGX or next EGX Res, Charlie should have her own Dr. Phil Algernon show.
Definitely. If I knew I could sit down here the whole time, I would have done.
Exactly.
I'm not going to lie. This is quite comfortable.
Thank you very much, everyone, for coming out. Please do follow us on Twitter. All our names are there. We'll provide as much info as we can. And please provide feedback as much as you can. Other than that, thank you again so much for coming out, and have a great remainder of your ETX. Thank you, everyone.
As alluded to in the panel, there is still a ton of work to do in representation in various ways. But since that panel last October, there has been representation in incredible and significant ways within various areas, stemming from one of the biggest releases of this year in the form of a massive AAA game, The Last of Us Part 2. Now would be a good time to either cover your ears or dump out if you've yet to play the game, as I'm going to mention some seriously heavy spoilers here. For one, we already know about Ellie's sexuality, her being gay, from the first game and its DLC Left Behind. But in Part 2, we see Ellie fully enter into a gay passing relationship with Dina, a bisexual woman that is told during the course of the game. You soon discover as the game goes on that Dina is actually pregnant with the child of her ex-boyfriend Jesse. As the game gets towards its end, you see Ellie and Dina have made a home together alongside the now-born child of Dina's, a son named JJ. In addition, when playing the game as Abby, you'll encounter Lev, a child among the Seraphites cult who act as one of the two main human enemy groups in the game. Before the game's story begins, Lev starts to identify more as male and starts presenting as such, including shaving his head. Because of this action, the Scars, shorthand term to describe the Seraphites, find themselves angered to the point it forces Lev and his sister to abandon them and leave. Lev's story is the biggest example of a trans character and trans storytelling in a AAA game to date, although Naughty Dog has been criticised for deadnaming Lev's character at numerous stages during the course of the game. As well as The Last of Us Part 2, there is also the upcoming Tell Me Why from Life is Strange developer Don't Nod Entertainment and Microsoft, featuring the story of Tyler Ronan, the first trans man in a leading role in a AAA game, whose story of his transition has been consulted on in LGBTQIA organization GLAAD, and with a trans man acting in the main role, Tyler. It is worth noting though, Lev in The Last of Us Part 2 is played by the QA actor Ian Alexander, himself a trans masked man who identifies as pansexual. There is still more to go in terms of representation of the queer community, our mission standpoints, and our aims. But compared to where representation was before, we've come a long way. And while there is still much work to be done to get the representation we as a community deserve, it is much better than it was. We're certainly far more along than we were 10 years ago, let alone 20. Press Play is hosted, written, and produced by me, Johnny Cullen. Hello. Special thanks to Izzy Yeagan, Hannah Flynn, Charlie Hodson, Else White, and Ed Fear, as well as Tom Champion. Press Play is a podcast by PlayDiaries.com, a website that focuses on telling interesting and unique stories about video games on both the AAA and indie level, as well as culturally, and taking a look at them in a different, critical way. There's not been a whole lot of press play recently thanks to the technical difficulties encountered in the situation I referenced at the start of this episode, as well as the fact I basically broke the right side of my body in a scooter accident at the end of May, having to have surgery on a busted ankle and recovering from both those things. Very fun times, friends. Very fun times. Nevertheless, I am already plotting out future episodes of Press Play for September and October. So be sure to keep an eye for new episodes then. Until then, if you want to hear or read more stuff like this in future, both in podcast and written form, visit PlayDiaries.com. Thanks for listening.